Welcome to the West Highland Way Race Podcasts. I'm John Kinnaston and this is episode 45. Welcome to the latest podcast from the West Highland Way Race. I'm recording this on Tuesday the 11th of June, so the West Highland Way Race is now 10 days, 7 hours and 50 minutes away as I speak. For those who are doing the race, I'm sure it's foremost on your mind. I must admit, the first thing I think about when I wake up in the morning, when I'm at work and there's a few moments to think, it's my mind tends to go to the race, making sure I've got everything done. It's funny at the moment because I'm only running every other day, so I'm not running as much. My running is tends to be my big thinking time, so it's quite funny really in that way. But anyway, the race is very soon. Probably when I get this out, it'll be even closer. So I'm sure everyone's looking forward to the race, whether you're running or supporting or marshalling or just following the race and maybe thinking about doing it in the future time. In this latest podcast, there's three main items. The first one is a blog post of the week, and I've read out a post from the blog Achilles Niggles, which is all about kit and what kit to wear and what kit this person has planned for the race. And then the second one is a follow-up interview that I did last night with Caroline Mackay. Caroline is doing the Western States 100 on the 29th of June, so a week after the West Highland Way Race. And we interviewed Caroline a few for early March and found out a bit about how she got a place on the Western States and a plan for her training. And then this one is a bit of a catch-up. She tells us of how her fling got on and what she's been doing since, and her plans for the race. So that's a really interesting interview as well. And it'd be good to find out from Caroline afterwards, maybe just a comparison between the West Highland Way Race and the Western States 100. And then the final part of this podcast is an item from Andy Cole, which I've not actually got yet. Andy's gonna send it to me hopefully in the next day or so, and I'll add that on. So that will be a surprise to me as well on what that's all about. But Andy is someone who always has lots of really good things to say, whether it's on these podcasts or whether it's on his blog. So I look forward to hearing that. So three items today: the blog post of the week, interview with Caroline Mackay, and Andy Cole's contribution. So I hope you enjoy. For this week's blog post of the week, I've chosen a post from achillesniggle.wordpress.com. Outside the comfort zone, running till it hurts. I think I've worked out who this is, but as they don't actually put the name on it, maybe they don't want to be identified, so I'll keep it at that. But if you want to find this this post, you can go to the westhighlandwayrace.org website, and there's a link to West Highland Way blogs, and then this one's called, I say, Outside the Comfort Zone, and it's achillesniggle.wordpress.com. This one was written on 8th of June, and it's entitled WHW Race Kit List. It is getting to that time when I have to make some decisions about what kit I will wear on the West Highland Way Race. After much trial and error, I am just about settled on my kit list. So, bearing exceptional weather, I shall be wearing some combination of the following. OMM Kamlika Smock. I love my OMM jacket. It keeps me nice, keeps me dry in all sorts of weather, pulls down over my hands and has a good hood. Nice and light, so can be carried just in case. Hope I don't need it. OMM Kamlika Trousers. Hopefully I won't need to wear these, but they are a fantastic over trouser. Easy to slip on and off, keep the wind and rain out, and are articulated so that you can actually run comfortably in them. Swiss Alpine Marathon Race Jacket. This is a lightweight, rip-stop nylon zip jacket, keeps the wind off and weighs nothing at all, so really is really handy for keeping the chill off on a dry day. This was a freebie at the 25th anniversary race. Buff. Everyone needs a buff. Multi-purpose, keeps you warm, keeps the sun off, stops the sweat dripping into your eyes. OMM Vector T. Long sleeve shirt. This is a really great base layer which really keeps you warm, but at the same time works well in the warm. Expecting this to be my nighttime wear, and potentially my all-day wear too if the weather is iffy. Ron Hill Trail Zip Shirt, a good compromise for a warm day. I really like the long zip, which is a great way to cool down. This shirt comes with a zip pocket on the back as well as two elasticated hip pockets. To be honest, I have never used these as I don't like things bouncing around on my back, but if I have to carry, then I prefer my belt or rucksack. X Bionic Boxer Shorts. I did think Helen was being a wee bit cheeky when I received them as a gift, but they actually are very good. They stay dry and provide a wee bit of support. They also help avoid nasty chafing in the upper thigh groin. Hoka 3/4 Compression Tights. Discovered these in Spain at the Barcelona Marathon. Heavy duty compression, but comfortable with it. Expecting to pull these on at some point after Rannoch Mall to try to keep my legs moving in something approaching the right direction. 2 XU Compression Shorts. I really don't like wearing these, but they do help. Expecting to wear them over the first half. Ron Hill Cargo Trail Shorts. These are comfortable, very lightweight shorts with a huge array of pockets and gel holders, none of which I use except for the secure zip pocket on the waist. These will get an outing if it's a warm day, if I decide that I don't want to wear my 2XU compression shorts. CEP Calf Sleeves. I'm a recent convert to calf sleeves. Having suffered some calf troubles earlier in the year, I now wear these regularly when racing. They give great support and help keep you warm. Funky colours as well. Ingini Trail Socks, the latest fad. I have to admit I was very sceptical about these, as socks with toes are just downright unnatural, verging on pervy. However, I am a convert. Since wearing these, I have had very few blisters and they are extremely comfortable. They are, however, a pig to get on and off, especially if, like me, you have funny shaped toes. Fortunately, on race day, I fully expect someone else to do any foot care which is required. Thanks, support crew, as my chance of having either the flexibility to reach my feet or the coordination to remove socks successfully is slim to none. Trimax Trail Socks. Another item which is becoming increasingly popular with the ultra community. I have yet to learn to love these, but I think I will wear them as a second pair on top of my Injinjis, just to give additional cushioning. Innovate Gaiters, handy for keeping the debris out of your shoes and socks. Brooks Pure Grit Shoes, love my grits. They give great flexibility and contact with the ground. Hoping to wear them through the first half of the race. Unfortunately, as luck or bad planning would have it, I wore them today and came to the conclusion that my current pair really have reached the end of their life. Eek! Only 10 days to find and break in another pair. Fortunately, they don't need any breaking in. They are comfortable straight from the box. Brooks Caseda Shoes. These are a new addition to my shoe cupboard, but I expect to wear these over the second half of the race, which is much more stony underfoot and where the stability and support will be more used to me than my speedy grits. Salomon XA20 Backpack does the job nicely. Maybe a little large, but it carries all my stuff and is comfortable with handy pockets on the waist belt. Innovate Rate Elite Belt. Expect to alternate this with my backpack just to give me a change of posture. We'll use this on the shorter sections. Has great roomy pockets without being too big. Petzl Tikina Head Torch. Probably frowned on by those who have big expensive head torches, but I have run plenty of miles with this one in the winter, so expect that it will be adequate. However, bought a second bigger torch just in case. We'll probably wear this one on my wrist to help give additional light where I need it. Jazuli Q5 160 Lumens Cree Head Torch. Cheap and cheerful, only cost £12 and has a massive beam. If it only does me the West Highland Way race, then it will be worth the money. On top of all these, I have various items as options for extreme weather, including woolly hats, Gore-Tex gloves, Gore-Tex shell, etc, etc, etc. Having organised all of these variations and options, you just know that I'm going to wear the same few simple things from start to finish. And they say that running is a simple sport because all you need are some shoes. So thank you very much for that post, and I think you're very thorough there in all your equipment, so well done. I'm sure folks will have a read of that as well, and maybe add one or two bits to their kit list. Welcome to our latest West Highland Way Race podcast. And I've got Caroline Mackay at the other end of the screen. We interviewed Caroline on the 7th of March when she told us a bit about getting a place in the Western States 100 and her plans for her training. And we said then that it would be good just to have a little catch up before she goes. So that's what we're doing. So welcome back, Caroline.
Thank you.
And it's good to speak to you again. And I say it was early March, so that was what, 3 months ago. So maybe first of all, you could just tell us a little bit about how your training's going. I know you did the fling and we'll talk about that in a moment. But generally, how's your training going? Your long runs, your heat training and various things in preparation for the Western States?
Yeah, sure. So it's gone really well on the whole. There's been a few bumps in the road, but they've been thankfully quite minor, which I'll come on to talk about. So I've had a few kind of curveballs to deal with, mainly after the fling. But kind of, I'm trying to jog my memory to think back to kind of March, April time now, because it's the fling and everything since that that's in my mind. But I've basically focused on the training plan I wrote for the Western States. I focused on 1 to 2 weekends of kind of long back-to-backs, long hilly efforts at the weekend, and then my kind of key regular sessions in the week. And they've consisted of, I've been doing 1 or 2 kind of sessions of speed work in the week, which has kind of fluctuated a bit since the fling. And a couple of hilly, well, probably actually 3 or 4 hilly runs in the week. And then a couple of tempo and recovery runs. So it's gone really well, and I've managed to kind of maintain that with a decent consistency. I think probably a better consistency in my training than I've ever had in the last 3 or 4 years. And I think that's probably due to just, you know, really being kind of determined to stick to this training plan this time. Because I tend to write them and not really follow them. I've done that in the past, and I kind of like the freedom of just mixing up a bit as well. So I've swapped days around a bit, but I've really maintained the consistency this year. So I'm pretty happy with that, and pretty happy with my mileage, which I know it's not all about mileage and weekly mileage, but I've kind of maintained between 65, 70 miles to peaking out at 110 with weeks like the fling and my longest back-to-back in the West Highway. So specific sessions have been, I did a long back-to-back in Kirkcudbright when I was down there for the weekend in April, and that was kind of my key weekend one in April, and then obviously there was the fling. After that, my longest, going on to May, my longest back-to-back, so kind of my peak training weekend really for the Western States, was the end of May, bank holiday weekend, where I went out to the West Highway and ran 72 miles over 2 days. And that went really well. There was a few slip-ups, literally. I had a fall on day one. We actually had a really hot day on day one. On the Saturday, we ran from Milgai up to Ben Glass. So I managed to recruit some people to come and run with me, a lot of whom were training for the West Highland Way, which is great. So had Fiona Cameron and David Gow and Bob Steele and Lorna McMillan, they all joined me for day one, which was fab. It was great to have that company. The miles just kind of fly away and pass, and you know, you've got the banter and the chat going on, and that was really good. And just running, getting to run in the heat in Scotland was amazing as well. It was brilliant training, although I did have to remind myself I'd be in, you know, 10 degrees warmer than what it was in the day, and it felt like it was about 30 degrees. I think it was probably only in the early 20s. But I think it was one of the hottest days of the year so far on that Saturday, so it was really good. And on that first day, we ran quite a fast pace, actually, running with them, the guys, and Fiona, Lorna, and we all kind of were encouraging ourselves to keep a fairly swift pace. I don't know if it was that or just trying to keep up with the front runners, but it was a lot faster than I would have run on my own. Knowing we had to run, you know, 30 miles on a Sunday as well. So it went really well until just a few miles from the end, actually, where we ended at Ben Glass. I had a fall on, you know, those wooden planks. There's a stretch of trail with kind of wooden boardwalks, and I just tripped up on one of them. I just wasn't lifting my feet. Kind of classic thing you do when you're tired in training and races and things, and just fell flat on my face. I didn't manage to kind of roll away from the board and just split my knee open. So there's a lot of blood and only had a few miles to go, which was fine. So I had a wee dip in the burn there. So I cleaned it all up and ran back to the Drovers. So that was good. We got, I think it was about 42 miles that day. And we literally ran all the hills in that 42 miles, which was really, really good training. And we're super exhausted that night. The next day we did the 30 miles. We did mountain back instead of going up to Fort William, which I thought would be a bit much from Tyndrum. We thought we'll do 30 miles. We went up to Babridge on Rannoch Muir and turned back and did that. And again, we didn't get quite as hot a day as a Saturday, but the pace was, probably just as fast as the Saturday. And again, running all the hills, running the Bridge of Orkney Hill in particular, that was an absolute killer. We ran it both ways on the out and back. And had a few wee stops and everything. No more falls, which was good. And what else? Yeah, I had a wee mechanical issue with my pack. So it was good, just good to get the experience of running in the kit that I was, planning to run in the Western States, because some of it did go wrong. And I thought, there's no way I'm running in that race with using a bladder. So that changed my mind about some of my kit, actually, because it was such a faff and it ended up breaking. So, so that's been my kind of peak weekend. And since then, actually, the weekend after that, I did some quite hard efforts. I think they were all the harder because I'd, done the back-to-back the weekend before as well. So I was running down up in Glenshee. We were there for the weekend. And basically ran up and down some hills all day on the Saturday. And on the Sunday, when we got back to Edinburgh, I did another hill run. So really, really pushing myself, pushing my quads and trying to get lots of kind of downhill repeats in there. But yeah, to be honest with you, I'm pretty ready for the taper now, because those two weekends in particular, which have obviously been really recent, they have completely exhausted me. And I found it quite hard to run up hills since then, so I've obviously got some benefit from it. I can kind of feel that instinctively. So yeah, it's gone well.
Well done. I remember when we spoke last time, I was quite intrigued about this heat chamber, because Obviously the Western States is going to be in probably a very hot race. So you'd booked in some sessions. So do you want to tell us a little bit about how that's gone?
Yeah, sure. That's been another aspect, and a couple of sessions every month from February time. So I have been, how many times altogether? Probably 7 or 8 now. I actually only did one in May just because it was fully booked and it was really busy, and the research I've been working with there, who manages the chamber, has been away quite a lot. So so up to that point, we were only doing hour-long sessions, but in the next week, I'll be doing 2 hour-and-a-half long sessions. So I've still got my kind of final, longest sessions to go, because we wanted to leave those till the last minute, right before I fly, because you actually get the kind of physical adaptations to heat. And we're going to be running at altitude as well, 3,000 metres altitude in the chamber, as well as 36 degrees.
And that's on a treadmill, is it?
Pardon?
Is it on a treadmill?
Yeah, it's on a treadmill, but it's quite costly. So I've been organising for friends who are training for various Ironmans and triathlons and things like that to come and join me. People are training for races in the heat as well. So it takes maximum 4 people, but there's only 1 treadmill, so we do have to rotate around.
Right.
But they put stationary road bikes up in there, so it's been a good lesson in cross training as well. I've done lots of road biking, which is harder than running, especially if you're not used to it. But I haven't road biked in quite a while since I did duathlon, so that was interesting. But they say even standing or doing exercises or stretching in the chamber actually has a benefit, cause it's just being in the heat, your body physically, adapts to that. So, and obviously the last few weeks when it's been lovely and warm, I've been out, in the heat of the day whenever I can, at the weekends I've been going out midday heat, just trying to get my body used to it, really, and take water and practice drinking with lots of water, because it's something I've never been that good at, but I've never really even carried 2 bottles when I'm out. So it's just kind of getting used to the kit I'll need to use as well. And we've been doing that in the chamber and be doing it next week, kind of taking all the kit that I'm going to be wearing during the Western States. So,
yeah. And can you feel your body changing and adapting to the heat?
It's hard to say. No, you can't really kind of directly feel it when you're, you know, training in the heat. But I don't know if I've noticed a specific change as yet. They say, like Leslie, the researcher at the chamber, she says the most important thing is recovery. So it's being in the heat and it's getting used to it, you know, physically and mentally as well. But it's also recovery. So if you don't give yourself the proper time to recover after your chamber session, then you know you're not really adapting as you would, and it's recovery. It's during that recovery time that you actually improve. If you don't give yourself time to recover and then go straight into another tough session, then you're actually losing half the benefit, she says. So I've been told off a few times for going out and doing 20-mile runs or whatever after the chamber. She says, you know, there's not a lot of point in in doing this training if you don't give yourself, you know, at least a good rest the next day. So
okay, that sounds interesting. I think the Fling was your big sort of warm-up race, wasn't it, before the Western States? And I was looking at your records, Caroline, and in 2012 you ran it in 10 hours 43, and I think the year before you were maybe a little bit slower than that or similar time,
a wee bit faster
all right, okay. But this year you were 9 hours 36 23. So tell us how that race went. And obviously, I assume you were racing it rather than just using it as a training run.
Yeah, I was racing it. I'm absolutely delighted with the Fling experience this year, because I felt the last couple of years that I'd run it before, I didn't really feel I'd done it, you know, justice. And I had issues in both those races, as you do in a lot of races. But I just felt I had a bit of a better time in me. And I thought, you know, it's a perfect time to race it this year when I've been putting all this kind of intensive training in for the Western States. So I just wanted to kind of do my absolute best and do the race justice, because it was one of my first ultras and I absolutely love the Fling, and John put on an amazing race this year. It was just a brilliant experience. Yeah. Apart from, you know, I did have an issue I'll start from the beginning actually. I had a few issues, one being, and I've had this in previous races as well, one being that I could hardly sleep the night before again. So it's something I'm really trying to sort out in terms of relaxing before a race and
just feeling really, just feeling nervous.
Yeah, just nervous, and then you know, just stressing about sleeping, and then you don't sleep. It's a classic thing you get, you know, on Sunday nights or whatever. I just couldn't get to sleep, and it didn't help that I was staying in the centre of Glasgow and it was pretty noisy. So I probably got an hour or two, but hardly anything at all. And it's something I'm really going to try and sort for the Western States, I think. But so when I started the race, I did feel tired and I felt a wee bit stressed out and just my head wasn't in the best place. But I think with every race, you just get into it and you forget that sooner or later. I think that's where the kind of, you know, it can be a form of meditation, people say, don't they? So I think your head does kind of naturally calm down when you're just focusing on putting one foot in front of the other. So I did settle into it, and the tiredness didn't really affect me past the first kind of 10 miles or so, I'd say. And I gave myself really kind of conservative split times to follow this year. So even though obviously I wanted to do a lot better, I hoped and maybe knew that I would be capable of doing better this year. But I was thinking, you know, between 10 hours and 10:15, an absolute best case scenario was sub 10. So I'd worked out kind of rough splits for each checkpoint based on those kind of range of targets. And, you know, from the early checkpoints, I think I reached Drimmen in 1:40, which was about what I was aiming to do. And then from then on in, you know, each checkpoint I reached, I was kind of exceeding the target by, you know, 10, 15 minutes in some cases. And I think that puts you in such a positive place as well. And you think, you know, I can do this, and all I have to do is keep on running steady and, you know, just maintain the pace really. And I don't feel like I really pushed it at any point either. So it's a weird thing to think that I really struggled to get the time I did the year before, whereas this year, it just shows the benefits of specific training, I think.
Yeah.
The rest of the race, it went relatively smoothly up until, now I'm having a bit of problem remembering exactly where it happened, but I was crossing a stile and I just missed the bottom step and my foot slipped and I just jumped, I just landed quite heavily on my left foot. And I felt something, I felt kind of a sudden pain in my ankle. It's kind of more the side of my foot, actually. And it was one of those things you just think, you know, like when you roll your ankle, you think, oh, I'll run it off. And I did, but it was still fairly sore. It ended up, you know, the pain went away for a wee bit, but it came back pretty badly after bent glass. And with every step, I could just feel this pain in one little specific location. And I was thinking, oh no, what have I done? Stress factor or something. So ran to the, you know, finished the race running and managed to kind of maintain the pace because I was just thinking, you know, if I've done damage, I've already done damage and, you know, just keen to finish. And I was heading for such a good time for me that I thought, you know, it's not going to make the injury that much worse, just running these last 10 miles type thing. So I finished and, you know, obviously delighted with my time and everything. And I still feel I put in a good pace at the end, actually. So obviously finished in 9:36. And as soon as I crossed the finish line, I could hardly walk. The pain came back and had a shower and everything. And it's funny how I think the adrenaline just must have taken over when I was actually running. And it's an amazing thing, the body. You just kind of, you get on with it and you get through it and there's obviously kind of, you know, there's things that are really helping you finish, even though you've done a bit of damage type thing. So there was a bruise spreading up my foot, so I had kind of a purple bruise across my foot, and went to see the doctor, and he said he didn't think it was, you know, he didn't think I'd broken anything, which was obviously the best thing, and gave me a wee examination and things, and said he thought it was soft tissue, which it turned out to be. So it's been a bit of a spanner in the works, but it actually only took probably a week to 10 days to recover from, and it gave me a bit of pain in the longer runs that I did within the next few weeks, you know, the first few weeks after the fling. But on the whole, it's, you know, it wasn't too bad. It wasn't as bad as I thought it was when I finished, so... Yeah.
Well, I must admit, I probably finished about half an hour after you, and I remember I was having a massage, and I looked across, and you were being dealt with by Sean.
Yeah.
And I looked in, you had a nice pack on, it looked, you could see the bruise sort of developing up your ankle, and I was thinking, oh, I hope she's okay.
To be honest, I was nearly in tears because I was thinking, oh God, is this going to take me out of Western State? You know, you just think the worst, don't you?
Yeah.
But my own doctor at home when I got back to Edinburgh, they confirmed it's just soft tissue. And I went to see the physio as well, actually. And he said, yeah, it's not, he didn't even think I'd done any, you know, major damage to the ligaments or anything. He thought it was just a burst blood vessels, bizarrely, which had swollen the ankle up. So he thought I just burst some when I landed. But it's just a bad bruise. So,
yeah,
thankfully, all okay now. I did have to take a bit of time, you know, more than planned, to recover from that race, but yeah, it was good. It gave me a lot of confidence. So,
in some ways, that was maybe not a bad thing because with such a good time, you may have been tempted to say, right, let's push on.
Yeah.
Whereas maybe that just gave you an extra week or so to make sure you've fully recovered from that
before
you started doing your big back to backs building up. So
yeah, definitely. I think so. I think we were really lucky with the weather that day as well because the conditions were excellent, weren't they?
Yeah, they were.
It wasn't as hot as it's been previous years, and you know, it was a beautiful day actually. But I think that obviously contributed to a better time, I think. So.
Yeah. It does show you though, doesn't it? Just one little slip, you know, just missing one step of a stile.
Yeah.
And you know, it could have been worse. You know, you have to concentrate the whole time, don't you?
You do. I think that's what it is. It is partly in the mind. You have to stay mindful and present.
Yeah.
You know, in everything you're doing, and I'm quite bad for when I'm, you know, reaching the end of a long session or a race, and you do kind of you switch off and you stop thinking. I think everyone does it to some extent, but you do learn from it. So.
It surprises me how sometimes you're on a very technical bit and nobody falls because you're concentrating, and then you're running on what seems just to be a very even path and people trip over a little pebble, you know, and they
totally
fall. And it
happens all the time. Yeah,
yeah, because
I've injured myself walking, well, running down my street before, just on curbs and things. You know, yeah, it's terrible.
Yeah. Well, Carol, it sounds as though your training's gone really well, besides this little hiccup with the fling. That was a great time. So can you tell us a little bit about your preparations for the Western States? Obviously, besides the physical side, you've done all that hard work. Things like your transport out there, your support. How is that all coming together?
Yeah, sure. It's coming on really well. And just in the last few weeks, actually, I've had more conversations with my crew and my pacers out there, which we needed to have, really. It was getting to the last, you know, the last month, and I was thinking, we're still not. It's very hard to organise these things from a distance, because for me, I can't do a recce drive of the route. I can't. I'm not entirely sure. There's a lot of brilliant information on the Western States website and in the, you know, the race information packs and all that. But, you know, there are so many little details that you just can't know from a distance when you don't know the route. From first-hand experience. So I'm really lucky with the pacers that I found through this ultra runner forum called the Ultra List, because between the husband and wife team who'll both be pacing me, and also one of their brothers who's coming out and he's going to pace me for a wee bit as well, between them I think they've run it 5 times, and so they've got quite a few buckles on their belts. And they used to live near one of the aid stations as well. And so they just know the trail so well. And they've actually just in the last few weeks answered so many questions I had. So I'm feeling a bit more comfortable about the plans we've got. Obviously, I'm going out 10 days before. I'm flying out next Wednesday. So I'll be there 10 days before the start of the race. And I am hiking the trail from the finishing end, Auburn, and then I'm hiking it, doing a wee bit of easy running as well from Squaw Valley, which is the start. So I'm going to try and familiarise with most of the trail and also with my crew. So my main crew is Dan, my friend Dan, who lives in Nevada, and these pacers live in California. So they're actually, we've divided it up into two parts. So Dan and two of his friends from his running club, I think, they're going to come and help crew me for the first half of the race, and I'm staying with him the week before as well, so we're going to go out and do a recce drive and, you know, do these kind of hikes and things like that together and just go over the plan that I've already made. So I have got a race plan, but go over it and tweak it if we need to, do some Skyping with the pacers who live quite far away now, and then the pacers, they're going to obviously just pace me from where I'm allowed a pacer, which is Forest Hill, 62 miles. So we have got this kind of template plan, but I think it probably will be tweaked. And I've got, you know, I've got my kind of different targets and I've got my different split times I'm aiming for. But yeah, I think it's very hard to say exactly when I'm going to be in each aid station at the moment. So they are very rough targets at the moment, and I probably will work on them a bit more over the next few weeks. And in terms of other things like nutrition, I've, again, just working off the races I've done this year and what I've wanted specifically in the last few months, or the last, you know, even few weeks when I've been out training, and, you know, in the really warm day we're on the West Hanaway, I was thinking, you know, it's really warm now, what do I want? It's hot, what kind of food, what kind of drink? I've added a lot of salty snacks to my to my nutrition list for the Western States now. So I have got a really long list of supplies to give my crew. So food and drink and the main nutrition I want. But obviously being the Western States, it's massively well supported, and the aid stations are just like, you know, they're huge big buffet tables, and they have everything there that you'd probably want anyway. So, you know, I might refine it a bit and not go too crazy, but at the same time, you want to have your own things there too, just in case, you know. But we've actually, in terms of my support, originally, so for only some of the aid stations you're allowed support at, so you know, there are some really remote aid stations that you literally, your crew can't drive to, and so I think in the first half, I've got my race plan here, I think there's four or five that the crew can actually get to, and that's up to 55 miles. And I was planning to have my crew at every single one possible, but I've since been advised by these pacer guys that, you know, well, logistically that's not possible to have the same crew at every one. And also, it's not advisable if you're trying to get a decent time, and if you want to move through each aid station fast, then actually can be quite off-putting to have crew there, because you'll want to, you know, you want to have a conversation with them. You'll probably stop when you don't actually need to, because there are so many volunteers and so much support available at each aid station from the Western States crew, that it's really, at some point, it's not really needed to have your own crew there if you're aiming for certain, you know, ambitious targets. So I've actually decided now just to have crew at two of these aid stations in the first half, which doesn't sound like a lot at all on 55 miles, but I'm told that, you know, that is all that's needed for the type of time that I'm wanting to run. So it makes it ever more important to get my kit right, I think, because I've just had a delivery of some new kit this week, actually, so I still need to go and test some of it out myself. But I think, obviously, in the 10 days I'm there before, it'll be a good chance to go out in various kit on the actual trail and just make sure I know exactly what's best for me to be wearing and the kit with me on the day. So, yeah.
Yeah, well done. Yeah, that sounds like you're preparing really well and got it all together. I was looking on the website today, the Western States, and they were talking about these book calls, aren't they? The aims, and is it bronze if you're under 30 hours?
Yeah, bronze.
And
if you're under
silver
30.
If you're under 24. There's no right. Gold, is there? That's the silver's
the. No gold for some reason. Right. I'm not sure what the thinking was behind that. Yeah.
So what are you aiming for?
I'm definitely aiming for silver. So,
right.
But again, you know, my kind of bronze target is just to finish the thing.
Yeah.
The absolute last thing I want to do is, after all this training and preparing and, you know, talking about it, is go out there and not be able to finish, or, you know, the worst thing would be to get an injury or something. So, you know, as I was saying before, I'm just going to be really mindful and careful and focused. I think focus is massively important. Yeah, under 24 is definitely my goal. I think, you know, I'd love to run a kind of 22 to 24 hour time, but we shall see.
Yeah. And is that definitely your splits are working on a sub 24?
Yeah, they are. They're working very roughly on 22 to 24 hour finish.
Yeah.
So my pacers are going to have to be hanging around for a bit, I think. So I have told them that there's quite a wide bracket, but I can't see how to do it any other way when you've never run the race before. And, you know, I'm not, you know, I know it's going to be really hot. And by the time I reach the pacers at mile 62 at Forest Hill, I will have been through the canyons and, you know, it could take longer than I'm planning. Or saying that, Western States have just published, they've got this split time calculator on their website, which I haven't had time to go and look at, but I need to plug in my kind of goal times and see what they come up with and compare it to what I've already calculated. So I'll see what that brings out. I'll probably end up tailoring it again. So
yeah. And I would imagine as well that if you're on your splits for the first, you know, 10 mile mark, 20 mile mark, 30 mile mark, then that gives the guys who are waiting at 62 an idea of whether you're on target or if you're behind or ahead. You know, so it's not blind, is it, in the sense of just waiting at 62? Presumably they can get the information, can't they?
Yeah, we'll be communicating to them.
Yeah.
In terms of, that, you know, my crew for the first half, Dan and Wendy and John, they're going to be communicating with the pacers, even though they don't actually know each other.
Yeah.
we know each other electronically now, so they'll be communicating with them well, so yeah, it should be okay.
At the end of the race, you'll be best of pals, and you'll have.
Yeah, I know.
You know, it's one of those things. It's that shared experience, isn't it, of going through something like that together?
Definitely. I just find people to be so generous, you know, with this race and with all other ultras really as well. But Tara and Eric, who are my pacers, they just want to be a part of the race because they didn't get in through the lottery, but they're so keen to help. They're basically bringing their whole family to help out for the second half. The kids are going to be crewing as well, I think. So, and their brother, and yeah, I think they see it as a, you know, their family holiday type thing.
Yeah.
But it's great. There's so much generosity out there. I think there's a lot of people that can't get into the race. They end up volunteering. So there's 1,500 volunteers across the whole course, which is immense. So I've been telling my dad, he's worrying about me. I've been telling him about the amount of support out there. There's something like 50 doctors and 75 nurses and physios and massage therapists. And said, Dad, I'll only ever be, you know, maximum 5 miles from these people. But you know what dads are like.
I think as well, I think you'll find that there's such a positive feel about, you know, races in the States. I've never been to the States, but that's the impression I get. You know, and I think everyone's really up for it, and there'll be a real positive vibe at every aid station.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. I think, you know, they're really lucky out there. There's just so many people to be involved, and, you know, some of the aid stations, I think, are more like little parties that you run through.
Yeah.
And I've heard that, you know, there's beers and music, and I'll need to just be really strict with myself about keeping moving. I think not stopping too long, because they do sound quite tempting. I think the river crossing, that there's a aid station, what mile is it? I think it's mile 78 or something, quite late on in the race. So I'll have a pacer then as well. But you come to a river crossing, and on low water years, you can basically wade across, and there's a guideline and things. But on high water years, there's a wee boat that you get taken over on, like a wee raft.
Yeah.
And I think there's something like 150 volunteers just at that one aid station to help you. So it's just crazy. It's amazing. And you don't have to have a crew to actually run the race, which is quite interesting. With most 100 milers, well, certainly in this country, you do, don't you? So.
But I'm sure as well, as soon as they realise you're from Scotland, and once they hear your accent, oh, they'll love that as well, and they'll be giving you lots of encouragement.
They definitely love an accent.
Well, I've just got a couple of questions to finish with. Okay, maybe can you tell us what's scaring you about the race? So is there anything that you're a little bit concerned about before you go?
I think the main thing, as I said before, I think just getting an injury and having to DNF, you know, I've never DNF'd a race, and I really, you know, the only time I could see myself DNFing is if you literally physically can't finish. And I want to kind of, like, you know, yeah, I just want to finish. That's probably the biggest thing, to be honest. And obviously the heat, the canyon section and the heat is largely an unknown for me. The steepness of descents sounds pretty brutal. So it'll be interesting to see if the downhill work I've been doing will, you know, make a difference. But I think, you know, you read so much about the Western States, you're definitely kind of, you know, mentally prepared to some degree, because you know, you've heard the stories over and over, you've read the blogs and you've seen the film and all that, you know, so I kind of know what to expect.
Yeah. And then what's exciting you most about going?
Oh, just hard to pick one thing, really. Just the whole experience of being in California again. I've run in the Sierra Nevada mountain range before, and I just fell in love with it. It's amazing, just the smell of the pines and the sunshine and mountains and sunset and just all that stuff. So probably just being in the mountains and being around that scenery and the atmosphere of the race, which is, you know, I've heard is just unparalleled. So like all of that, it's hard to pick one thing.
Yeah, no, I think the whole experience is going to be amazing.
On the streets, at the aid stations.
Yeah. So if the race is a week after the West Highland Way, it's the 29th, isn't it?
Yeah, it is.
So if people want to follow your progress, can we do that on the internet? Is it, where's the best place to go?
Yeah, there's a live update link that I'm going to send out very shortly, and I'll put it on my Facebook and Twitter and my blog and things. So my blog, it's chaptersandrunning.blogspot.co.uk, and basically you just click on the link and you can see where I am at a given time and see what progress I'm making in the times at each of the aid stations, etc., etc. And so I'll be sending that out. And I'm not sure, there was some post I saw from Western States that said this is the first time that you can actually watch the runners on video. I think they were trying to set that up. I'm not sure I want that, to be honest.
Is that just the finish? I think it's the finish, isn't it?
Maybe, yeah. But it was the first year that it was going to be set up in terms of following each, runner as they were going through aid stations as well.
Oh,
and
wow.
I'm not sure if they've actually succeeded in that, because it was kind of up in the air whether it was going to happen.
Right.
I'll check it out though, and I'll post about that as well.
Okay.
Yeah.
Good. Well, thank you very much, Caroline. And obviously, we all wish you all the best for this epic race. And we look forward to hearing how it all goes, and we'll definitely be following. I'll actually be flying that day. We're going off to Indonesia for our daughter's wedding. Yeah, so we'll be flying that Saturday. So I'll be at the airport in Dubai. I'll be trying to, Doha we are. I'll try and get an internet connection and see if I can see how you're getting on.
That's much more exciting than being sat around my computer, though.
Yeah.
That's brilliant. All the best for the West Ham away. Have a great race.
Yeah, thank you. And we'll try and get you on again, but it will be a few weeks after the race because we're away for 3 weeks. So,
Sure, that's fine. I'm actually away till mid July now as well.
So we'll definitely catch up though. It'll be good to get a podcast on how it went and how you feel it all, get the full story.
Yeah, great stuff.
Yeah.
Okay, thanks,
so,
John.
All the best.
Cheers.
An email from John Kinniston. I'd still like another contribution to the West Highland Way podcasts. If you fancy doing something for next week, that would be great. Me. I'll have a think, John. What's your deadline? John. Wednesday night. You'll have plenty of time as you're tapering. Ah, tapering. I'm not sure that I've ever understood it properly, but I think that's when you have a bit of rest after doing a lot of running, so that you can do a lot more running. Makes sense, I suppose. At the moment, I'm staying in the Lake District with my wife Jan, enjoying easy walks, lots of stops for tea and cake, and nice dinners. If that's tapering, then I'm tapering. Maybe this ramble will, in some way, be about tapering. Let's see where it takes us. So here we are. Just over a week until the start of the 2013 West Highland Way race. Are you ready for it? It seems a long time ago now since we all put in our applications back in November and waited for the confirmation that we were in. A lot of miles ago, a lot of turning out on dark, cold evenings, battling with the rain and snow, wet feet and cold hands, all with the thought that come June, it would be worth it. Resenting the time off because we were injured or picked up some bug or just because other things got in the way. Wondering whether we had missed too much running, trying to get back on track. Well, it's done now. Nothing else to do except relax and enjoy the rewards. Well, maybe. I've had a good 6 months. I've run about 1,000 miles, most of it pretty slowly. But once we got out of the gloom and cold of midwinter, most of it enjoyable. I never had many times when I thought, I really don't want to go out today. I've also done a number of races, but mainly for fun. Training runs with company and soup at the end, if you like. I've run marathons along the Blackpool seafront, up Scarfell Pike and through the rural Beaver Estate. I did a beautiful short ultra down on the Exmoor coast. And the 250-milers that I do most years. Of these, the Hardmoor's 55 was a pretty arctic affair this year, and the Highland Fling positively spring-like in comparison. The Fling was the only event that I actually decided to race. Now, this is a relative term for me, you understand. What happens at the front end of the field will always remain the preserve of athletes that I'm in awe of, not that I compete with. No, I just decided that after feeling good to Roa Denon, I should give the second half my best shot, which resulted in my just squeezing under 10 hours for a PB. And I'll take one of those any time they come along, thank you very much. But I finally decided that I was probably okay for the West Highland Way on the second weekend in May. On the Saturday, I ran out and back along one of my local trails, the Offa's Dyke Path, just over in Wales. 30 miles of steady going with around 4,000 feet of ascent. The real test then came early the following morning, with another 22 miles over relatively easy ground on supposedly tired legs. It felt like a walk in the park. That's it, I thought. I'll be good enough come June. Still some important training to come, but from that day I knew that barring accidents, I'd be in good enough physical shape for what I want to do. The key phrase, of course, is for what I want to do. Because no two runners will have exactly the same goals for the West Highland Way race. Some will want to win the race. Some will be happy to reach Fort William in 35 hours. Many will have a particular time that they want to achieve. Some will want to have an enjoyable day out. Some just want to finish in good shape. Others will be happy, if that's really the word, to be completely spent by the time they clutter the leisure centre door, so long as they get there. And so on. So when I say I think I'm in good enough shape to achieve my goal, that's all it is. Your goals will be different. So will your training. So will the benchmark by which hopefully, sometime over the last month or two, you'll have said to yourself, okay, I'm ready. I'm hooked on the West Highland Way race. This will be my seventh. And yet, in spite of its importance to me, or maybe because of it, I've never really had a poor performance that I was satisfied with. Maybe I never will. But I decided that this year I should at least give it a good go. I hesitate to think the phrase last chance, and I don't intend to give up this game for quite a few years yet. But we all reach an age where pushing our boundaries must get a lot harder, and I won't be surprised if that happens to me sometime soon. So my aim for this year is to finish on Saturday. That is, to get home in just under 23 hours. A modest enough goal for many people, but a worthwhile and stretching one for me. And I think I can do it. I've prepared as well as I can. From here on, it's in the head. Now, I've run plenty of marathons and ultras since I started a few years ago. Nearly 60 at the last count. Normally, I don't think too hard about them. There's no stress in the run-up. I just turn up on the day and try to have a nice time. We do this for fun, remember. Sometimes I go better than I expect, and at other times I find them hard. I've had a handful of DNFs along the way too. No matter, every outing is a worthwhile experience. But when you decide to single out an event as special, things are different. And you may just be experiencing a bit of that just now, in the last week or two, before the West Highland Way race. You worry that you're going to catch a cold or some other bug, that you're going to pull a muscle on one of your by now very easy winding down runs, that you're going to eat the wrong thing or not get enough sleep. Jan's got a cold at the moment. Normally I don't catch them, but this is not normally. This is now, the second week of June, not a normal time. And then there's the I'm okay but effect. You'll notice that every little niggle you shrugged off while you were still training hard has now grown in importance. You can feel it all the time, even though you're doing almost nothing. You start thinking, well, I'm okay, but... My own but at the moment is a bad knee. Now, I've had bad knees for a long time. After a lifetime of mountaineering and some nasty skiing crashes, when my ambitions sometimes outstripped my ability. I've had one bout of surgery, but the consultant I go to is a sportsman himself, so he understands what makes us tick, and the last thing he ever does is to tell you to rest. He's also a non-interventionist, who doesn't like to operate unless it's unavoidable, and takes the view that if you've got no swelling, no restriction in movement, and no clicking from your knees, then you probably won't do any damage, so just go out and do what you do. If it hurts a bit occasionally, well, so what? Just get on with it. My right knee has been hurting on and off for 2 or 3 months. Sometimes just noticeably, sometimes it makes my eyes water. I just work on the principle that it might be better tomorrow, and half the time it is. It's probably some loose bits of cartilage still wandering around, exposing nerve ends, so I live with it. That is, of course, until the last 3 weeks before the West Highland Way, when I can convince myself that it's anything from a stretched ligament to a stress fracture, likely to have dire effects on my performance on the 22nd of June. I'm loath to go out for a gentle 5 miler this afternoon in case it feels worse, because I just know that if I go, it will. If all this sounds familiar to you, then it's just because you're normal. If you invest 6 months or more of your spare time in any project, you don't want it to go wrong at the 11th hour. You just have to sort your head out. The only thing you can almost guarantee between now and the start of the race is that pretty well anything you do, short of getting spectacularly drunk next Friday evening, is not going to affect the outcome. What's done is done, what isn't done isn't done, and what will be, will be. If you've never run this distance before, don't worry about it. Plenty of people have, most of them not super athletes, just normal people with families, jobs, cars that need fixing and gas bills. They go out running a few hours a week and they make the trip okay. When I first thought of trying the Tour des Géants in Italy last year, I couldn't logically get my head around the 200 miles and near 80,000 feet of ascent involved. But what I did know was that 500 people had already done it, and the great majority of them were probably ordinary Joes like you and me, who just wanted their few days of adventure. So, as you fret through these last few days, and then when you finally make it to the start of the 95 miles of the West Highland Way, among all the thoughts going through your head, just try to reflect briefly on two undeniable facts. First, that over the years, around 700 people have made their way on foot from Mulgai to Fort William in under 35 hours. And second, of the whole population of the country, only a very tiny percentage have the will to commit to the journey and gain the right and, yes, the privilege to be on the start line. And you're one of them. Mulgai Station Yard next Friday night will be a whirl of activity, excitement, nervousness, anticipation, and everything else you associate with the start of a big event. Enjoy it all. And then, after the countdown, the start, the noisy send-off through the town, you'll reach the quiet darkness of the woods. You will become just one of a line of bobbing lights heading off towards the morning, and everything you worried about in these last couple of weeks will be forgotten. Have a good one.
I hope you enjoyed this latest West Highland Way Race podcast. I've had a chance now to listen to Andy Cole's contribution, and it was, as I expected, a really good one, thinking about tapering and his preparation for the West Highland Way Race. So I wish him all the best. And no doubt I'll be seeing him on the route, as well. I'll be seeing lots of others. I'm finishing this off now. It's Thursday evening, almost 4:30, and there's now 8 days, 8 hours, and 35 minutes to go before the start of the race. Getting closer by the day. And I'm sure you're looking forward to it, and whether you're involved in the running or the marshalling, supporting, whatever you're doing, it's getting closer and people are starting to get really excited by the race now. Hope that you're sleeping well. I hope that you're recovering well and the tapering's going good for you. I looked at the weather forecast this morning on BBC Weather at Tyndrum, and it was pretty reasonable actually. It looked 16 degrees during the day, which would be ideal, and a few rain showers, but they'll be fine as well. So if it's anything like that, then I think we'll be in for a good day. I always feel it's the extremes you want to avoid, the extreme heat where it's so hot that you're really struggling to drink enough and just feel lethargic, and the extreme wet and cold as it was last year is extreme. But anything in the middle is ideal, where it's a bit cooler, a little bit of rain's fine, but just try and avoid the extremes, which would be what we're hoping for. This is going to be the last podcast I'll do before the race. And I'm thinking, I've got an idea of maybe trying to do one during the race itself. And I'll take my iPhone with me. And if I feel like it and it's going okay, then I might just do some updates during the race and then piece it together afterwards. I also want to catch up, particularly with David and Ian that who've been following over the last few months, and to get their reaction at the end of the race as well. So if you do happen to run with me during the race and I ask you, would you like to give a comment? Then we'll see if we can do that. No, I probably won't do that to other people. That's a bit unfair. But I might well do it for myself if I feel like a little chat as I'm going up a hill somewhere. So all the best to everyone who's taking part in the race, and all the best to those that are involved in the marshalling and the organising. And as we all come together next Friday night to get ready for the early morning Saturday start, then it will be great just to get the West Highland Way Race family together for another attempt and another run on this great route. So thanks again for listening. I hope you've enjoyed these podcasts over the last few weeks and they've been helpful to you in preparing for this race. So goodbye for me for now, and I look forward to seeing you all in Mulgae a week tomorrow. And remember, slow and steady wins the race.